Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is unleashing the human potential. And the numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. And I'm going to set the table with our topic for today, but I'm also going to, I just realized that this is actually going to be my last live show of the year. You know, there'll be replays every week, but between Thanksgiving and the Hay House Christmas holidays and then the actual Christmas holidays and everything else, this is going to be my last time live. So, if you would like to, get on and talk to me about kind of anything to do with having a nicer, richer experience of being alive, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, again, 001-760-918-4300. So I was thinking about when this topic came up on my calendar, because I do the topics kind of in advance, I thought, oh, I've done that. I've done that show already, because I remembered talking about at length what it is to be unleashed. But I'm now not sure whether or not that was on a show. So I'm going to talk about being unleashed fresh, and I'm going to talk about what I mean by the human potential fresh, and let's see where it takes us. So the phrase unleashed, I first thought of that in relation to what's possible for human beings. Take my dogs to the beach. Now, sometimes I have a similar experience taking them up to, we have a dirt road up near here where we'll let them off lead, or the park, and they'll take off. I mean, they will just run and run and run, and you just see the joy in it. But I don't know that I've ever seen it more than with our last dogs when they were at the ocean. And there's that moment when you take them off the leash and they just run towards the water. They bound. They glump, they lollop, you know, and there's just such a release of energy and aliveness. And I think that is what is possible for all of us, to live with that kind of freedom and energy and aliveness in our own lives. And it's such a beautiful possibility for how we can be in this world. Now, in order to be unleashed, of course, that implies that in some ways we are leashed, we are attached to something. And generally speaking, what we are leashed to is our own thoughts. We're leashed to what we think is true, what we think are the edges of our world, what we think can't be changed, shouldn't be changed, isn't up for grabs, that we have to deal with. So unwittingly, we're tied down to our own memories, to our own imagination, to our own thought-created world. And I used this analogy on a call earlier today, but when they used to train elephants, or so the story went, they would tie a baby elephant to a stake in the ground, a wooden stake in the ground, and the elephant couldn't get away. And then at a certain point, the elephant learned, well, there's no point in pulling because I can't get away. And then even when the elephant is full grown, even when the elephant could probably pull a house if it was attached to a house, it doesn't even try. And that's us. We get so attached to our old ideas, to our old self-concepts, to our day-to-day normal, I'm using air quotes there, normal thinking, that we feel stuck. We feel like there's no point in even trying to expand our world. Or we try really hard for a little while because we get frustrated, and then we stop because we didn't get away. We didn't make the progress we thought we were supposed to make. It was all effort for no real freedom. But here's the thing. The difference between us and the elephant, the difference between us and the dogs, is we're not dependent on somebody else unleashing us. We're not dependent on waking up to the fact that the leash can't hold us. Because in a very real way, the leash itself isn't even real. In other words, the problem with unleashing as a metaphor is we've never been leashed in the first place. We just think we are. We've never been limited. We just thought we were. And so in the same way as if you were in prison in a dream and then you woke up and discovered you were free, you would feel an incredible sense of relief. You would feel an incredible sense of, oh, thank God. But in reality, you were free the whole time. And that's kind of closer to who we are. Now, the other part of the sentence, unleashing the human potential. Well, what is the human potential? Well, we can't kind of put it into words because anything that we put into words is just a description of what we've imagined so far, what we've experienced so far, what we've witnessed in ourselves or others so far. So the actual human potential is beyond anything that we can put into words. That's the beauty of it. That's the freedom of it, is that it isn't a thing. It isn't a limited game that, well, okay, I guess I've got the potential to do this much better than I was doing in the past. I guess I've got the potential to, for things to improve a bit, but I don't want to push my luck because, I don't have that much potential. No, the human potential is effectively unlimited simply because we have no idea what's possible. Right? There's a wonderful line I quote in one of the books. I think it's in The Inside Out Revolution from the author Arnold Patent. And he's talking about money. And it's a quote that I come back to time and again because it's just a simple observation about truth. We don't create abundance. Abundance is natural. We create limitation. Well, it's exactly the same with the human potential and freedom. We don't create freedom. Freedom is natural. We create limitation. We create leashes. We create do's and don'ts and good dog and bad dog and reasons why we should or shouldn't, can or can't, not even do things. But even think about them. I mean, isn't it kind of nutty that there are things that we think we can't think about? What if you were free to think absolutely anything in any moment? What new might start to come to mind? What new possibilities would begin to emerge? What different things might start to appeal to us? What additional depths of possibility and talent might we begin to see? So the foreword to The Inside Out Revolution was written by my friend, mentor, buddy, Dr. George Pransky. And he was really keen in writing the foreword to make sure that people saw that this really isn't about fixing what's broken. This really is about waking up to what's possible. And so he wrote, everyone experiences times of mental clarity and well-being, even moments of out-and-out genius. Even in the extremes of mental illness, every single patient has moments of normalcy, independent of the severity of their disorder. At a more personal level, we've all come up with inspirations and solutions that seem to have shown up out of nowhere to save the day. At times, our children's wisdom goes way beyond their level of education and life experience. And we consistently see high levels of well-being, grace, and hopefulness emerge in times of crisis, such as floods and earthquakes, and even with people informed of terminal illnesses. So it should be equally obvious that the human potential for life enjoyment, mental clarity, creativity, and relationship satisfaction is considerably higher than we're manifesting in our everyday lives. And what I point to in that book, in Supercoach, in the different books that I've attempted to write about this, as we come alive to our inner spark, we start to move through the world with greater ease and a less conditional sense of confidence and well-being. And while our life circumstances may still seem messy from time to time, people can't help but notice there's something different, right? There's a twinkle in the eye. There's a lovely feeling in just hanging out with somebody who's awake to that deeper potential. And in the book, I talk about it. I say some people describe this transformative shift as moving from riding a roller coaster to floating in a river. Others as the gift of meeting themselves for the first time. It's as if I've been plugged back into the mains, one client said to me. By far the most common description is some variation on the feeling of coming home after a long time away. While your experience will be unique to you, the awakening of your inner spark and a feeling of reconnection with the energy of life are part of the promise and purpose, in the book I say, of our time together, but in this conversation we have on the radio each week. Right, the point of this radio show, from my point of view, is not for you to enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it. I expect you wouldn't listen if you didn't enjoy it. But the point of this radio show is for you to wake up. To wake up from the dream of thought, to wake up from the illusion of limitation, to wake up from the self-created restriction that we try and escape from and try and unleash ourselves from, and to wake up to this deeper part of ourselves, to wake up to this inner spark, to wake up to this deeper potential, this deeper sense of possibility, the space within which creations arise, the space within which thoughts are thought and experiences are experienced, to wake up to our deeper nature, our true nature, the human potential. So I'm going to take calls when I can today because it's my last chance to talk to you this year one-on-one. So let's begin in Canada and let's begin with Vincent. Vincent, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hi, Micah.
Hi.
Hi, this is Vincent. I don't know if you remember me many, many months ago, I think about 7-8 months ago, I spoke to you once very briefly.
You're going to have to refresh my memory, but don't take it personally. I talk to a lot of people.
Yes. And what happened after talking to you? You know, I kind of didn't follow up much with what you said, and I didn't listen to your talks anymore. And I bought your book, the Inside Out, mm-hmm. and the Creating the Impossible.
Yeah.
And I'm just giving you a little background, and I read that, and it didn't do much for me. But then, for about 6 months, I had no contact with you. All of a sudden, just about 2-3 weeks ago, I just out of the blues, listened to one of your episodes, Daring to be an Adventure, Life to mm-hmm. be an Adventure.
Life is a Daring Adventure.
Life is a Daring Adventure. And that one, I think I must have listened to it about 5 times because it really struck a chord in me, you know. And then I went back to read your book, and suddenly all of a sudden everything made sense, and I just got glued to you, and I've been since then listening a lot. And then the reason I'm calling is I was listening to the episode a couple of days ago on presence,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it very, very much because it kind of resonates with what I've been thinking about, because I've been on this path for about, you know, 25, 30 years. And what you said I was going to ask you about was the truth about the dream. You know, you said this life is a dream,
mm-hmm.
and the dream can be pleasant or unpleasant. Regardless, it's still a dream. Right?
Yeah.
Pleasant or unpleasant is still a dream. And the real thing is to see this life like going to a movie, and to see the movie as a movie and not get identified with it. And the same way with life, to see your whole life as a dream,
mm-hmm.
and to, your specific word was that you want to live, you want to be awake in the dream.
No, I'm with you so far, Vincent. What would be, yes. What would be great for us to discuss? What would you like to hear from me?
So what I want to find out from you is a couple of things. One is this dream life that we're living, which can be a happy dream or sometimes it's a sad dream, depending on your circumstances, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'll come back to that one. But okay, so the dream.
Okay, the dream. So whether it's a happy one, the sad dream, I think, like I feel like the sad dream is, it's sad because I don't seem to know the truth behind what's happening. Like there's a truth to what's happening, and since I'm not aware of that truth, I'm kind of suffering in that dream. That's one. And the second thing that I don't see is that I don't see it as a dream. It seems real to me, see, when I'm suffering.
Right. So that it's the second one that takes care of the first. So what I'm pretty sure I didn't say, hey, live as though life is a dream. I'm pretty sure that I'm pretty sure that what I will have said is life is like a dream. And so that's the thing. If we wake up to the dream, waking up from the dream may or may not be in the cards, right? In other words, like that just seems to be a thing where somebody has a pure enlightenment experience that's kind of still pretty rare. But waking up to the dream, that actually is really common. We suddenly see through thought. It suddenly goes from solid to transparent, or at least shimmery around the edges. And when we see that the dream is a dream, it's a dream that exists independent of circumstances. In other words, a dream is not a bad dream because of circumstances. Dreams are pure fantasy. They're pure illusion. They're pure thought.
So there are no bad dreams? There's no good or bad dreams?
There are dreams we enjoy and dreams we don't, but they're not determined by circumstances. Most people have an experience of a time in their life where they didn't have much money and they loved their life.
Right.
And many people, most people probably also have experiences of a time in their life where they didn't have much money and they hated their life. Right. If you've been in circumstances where you had a lot of money, I can guarantee you, you've had times where you had a lot of money and hated your life and times where you had a lot of money and loved your life. There are times for everyone when they've not been in a relationship and they've been really happy and loved their life, and times when they weren't in a relationship and they didn't, times where so you see what I mean is the dream is independent of the circumstance. But if I know that it's temporary, see, the reason I don't have to control my dreams,
right?
The reason I don't have to even worry about controlling my dreams is because I know I'll always wake up again.
But if one is unhappy in the dream, like let's say my life is not going well and I'm unhappy, do I need to fix the dream?
Well, so here's the thing, and Vince, you're right at the heart of it, right? So where we're going is right where the confusion lies. So that's perfect. Okay. If the dream is not going well,
right?
That's not real. In other words, that's not to do with. So I'm trying to think of a way that I can kind of mark it more cleanly for you.
Thank you.
So let's say that a tree doesn't understand the nature of trees, and so it would say, in spring and summer, it's having a great dream, and in fall and winter, it's having a terrible dream.
Okay.
Right? Because in spring, it's coming to life. In summer, it's in full bloom. But in fall, it's beginning to die. And in winter, it looks pretty dead.
Right.
Right. Now, if that tree understood the whole cycle of trees, understood the inevitability of spring and fall, of summer and winter, then they probably wouldn't say, oh, the dream's going really badly in winter, but it's okay because it'll be going well again in spring. They would just be experiencing what it's like to be a tree in winter and then experiencing what it's like to be a tree in spring. that same possibility exists for us.
So you're saying it's like a cycle?
I'm saying, first off, there are cycles. Absolutely, there are cycles in life.
Okay.
But beyond that,
mm-hmm.
we're free to enjoy every single aspect of life, including the ones that are supposed to be negative.
That's the difficulty, isn't it? To enjoy something that's not going the way you want it to go, you know?
Well, here's the thing, though. The reason we don't enjoy when something's not going the way we want it to go is because we take our preferences very personally. Right? We think our preferences matter, that they're worthy of our time and respect, and that we really need to honor them and, you know, connect to them and... I don't know what words. There's a beautiful line. I just came across this line. I was reading a booklet on having faith in mind by the third Zen patriarch, Tsingtsun. And mm-hmm. and there was a line in there where he said, "Do not seek the truth. Only cease to cherish opinions."
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is at the heart of living the dream, is that when we stop thinking that our preference for one dream over another is significant. I'm not saying have one. But when we stop thinking, oh my God, I need to fulfill my preferences, then we're free to prefer what we prefer. We're free to experience what we're experiencing.
Right.
But we're also free to enjoy all of it. So it's not circumstances that mean I'm suffering. It's my preference for different circumstances and my taking those preferences to heart as if they really mattered.
That makes me suffer.
That's the root of suffering.
I see. So that means your life, as long as you don't take it very personally, whatever is happening is just happening then.
Well, whatever is happening whether you take it personally or not.
Right.
I'm just pointing out that, you know, there's nothing particularly great that gets added to the party by taking your opinion as if it was gospel.
So what is the truth that you talk about, or that every spiritual teacher talks about, that the truth will set you free? So what's the truth here?
Well, I'm not going to presume to speak for every spiritual teacher that ever lived. Well, no, what the heck? Let's speak for every. But within my understanding of what all spiritual teachers are pointing to, and thank you, Vincent. I'm gonna answer you, and then I'm gonna move to other callers. But one of the just beauties of having a conversation about capital T truth is that we get to look beyond our personal story, our personal experience, to see what is true for all human beings. What is true always? It was true before you were born. It will be true when you're not here. It's true if you think of yourself as spiritual. It's true if you've never heard of spirituality. What's just true about human beings and about life? And the truth that will set you free, it's been talked about in different ways. Part of it is what we were just talking about. If you can see that life is a dream, that life is a thought-created experience, a thought-created adventure, then you're free. Because you don't have to control it anymore. It doesn't have to be a certain way for you to be okay. It doesn't have to be a certain way for you to love your life. It doesn't have to be a certain way for you to presence and connect and love. So the truth that what we see is not reality, what we see is a personal reality. And that personal reality is made of thoughts, so it can change in a heartbeat. That will set us free. Another thing that when we see will set us free is seeing that for all intents and purposes, we don't exist. And that's a hell of a thing to say if you don't have any concept, any context for it. Right? But this notion that who we are is a kind of a person, that who we are is, you know, to do with our skin color, that who we are is to do with our religion, that who we are is to do with our culture or the place we were born. Those are very limited. They may be accurate, but they're descriptions of where your car came from and what kind of a car it is and how long you've been driving it and how much you've enjoyed the car. There's a wonderful quote by a Canadian mystic who's known as Wei Wu Wei. And it's one of my all-time favorite quotes. And he said, why are you unhappy? Because 99.9% of everything you think and of everything you do is for yourself. And there isn't one. And that's the truth that will set you free, is realizing that the you you're trying to set free doesn't really even exist. He talked about it in other ways. He said, play your part in the comedy, but don't identify yourself with your role. He said, as long as there is a you doing or not doing, thinking or not thinking, meditating or not meditating, you are no closer to home than the day you were born. In other words, it's not self-help. It's not that you need to see what kind of person you are and that will set you free. It's seeing that who you are is so much more than a person. It's seeing the impersonal nature of who we all are. It's awakening to spirit that sets us free. Let's go out to California. Let's talk with Patricia. Patricia, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Thank you, Michael, for taking my call. I really appreciate it. First of all, I want to thank you for putting yourself out there and for your teaching and the impact you've had on my life.
You're very welcome.
I was at your Experiencing God conference, and let me try and articulate my question. I should have formed it before, and I didn't. I know I'm not my body, and I think I've given up a lot, even my need to breathe, because I have breathing issues. Mm-hmm. But I still feel that subconsciously I am not letting go of the attachment of the outcome. Like, I live in a place of great gratitude, and I'm thankful, and I go and work out, and when I work out, I'm really grateful, and I enjoy it for what it is. But I know my body, I know God or the universe could heal me in a fraction of a second, like Anita Moore Johnny was healed in 6 weeks from cancer. And so I still have that attachment of the need to be healed. And I'm not sure how to give that up.
Well, let me ask you, and I'm not saying good idea, bad idea, but why do you want to give it up? Let's check with that first.
I'm not sure, just that I want to feel better.
Right. So that's not, not really giving it up. That's just kind of going, I might feel better quicker if I stop trying so hard to feel better.
Yes. Yes. And I could do more and accomplish more, and just to give up the fighting of the need to breathe or to move better. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to ask for a kind of a broad brushstroke of permission here.
Okay.
Is it okay with you if I just kind of go where I move to go and we'll clean it up after?
Oh, please.
Okay.
Please, absolutely. And feel free to say anything that you feel.
Okay. So in a world where all possibilities exist, that does include the possibility of healing. It also includes the possibility of dying.
Well, and I don't have a problem with that. I've already done that once.
Sorry, I actually remember your story.
But maybe I still have a little bit of what I have to go through to die.
Well, let's look at it a little differently. What for you is the difference between love and attachment?
I don't feel a lot of difference.
See, to me, those are two fundamentally different things. So I can love a person, and if they're not there, I'm absolutely fine. I can love a thing, and if it ceases to be there, I'm absolutely fine. But if at any point I start to think my well-being, my okayness is attached to, is dependent on the presence or absence of a thing, well, that's not love anymore. That's now love plus insecurity. That's love plus fear.
Okay, you've nailed it. You've really answered. Okay.
So what did you hear in that? Why don't you give it back to me in your words?
I need to give up my attachment or my need for something to happen and just love the moment for whatever it is. And I thought I had learned that, but I haven't. But your words just resonated. I'm sorry, I'm not articulating at all.
Well, no, you're articulating it just fine.
But I felt, as I heard your words, I felt of letting go of the need.
And I see
the difference.
Yeah, and that's really all that happens. And if you noticed, you didn't let go, it just relaxed.
Yeah, it fell away.
Right. And that's the difference, is when we see something that is more true, the stuff that wasn't true just disappears off the table. It's like I used to be baffled at how lifelong problems that people brought to these conversations about these principles and these, you know, spiritual ideas, how they could just disappear through conversation. And one of my mentors said to me, well, it's difficult to say how hard it is for something to disappear that never existed in the first place. Right? In other words, it's not like there's a real thing that falls away. It's in the same way as the leash isn't real. The attachment's not real.
Well, like the flashlight shines on the truth, so you don't need the non-truth.
Right. And that's the beauty, is that as we continue to look, we'll see more. As we see more, things will fall away. Life in this sense, this conversation in a sense, the human potential in a sense, is the state of meditation. It's the pure silence and stillness at the heart of life.
Yes, and I want my life to be the meditation. I still feel the need to meditate, and I don't want to feel. I want my life to be a prayer, and I want my life to be a meditation, not to have to do it.
And what you'll find in my experience, Patricia, is that you're already on the downhill side of that one. In other words, that snowball is already rolling. The fact that you can even see that difference, that you can even distinguish those two things, means you're far enough along that there's an inevitability to it. And I don't think if a rock is rolling downhill, if a snowball is rolling downhill, it's particularly worried about how long it's going to take.
Okay.
Thank you, Patricia.
Yeah, and thank you. Words cannot express my gratitude, Michael. Thank you.
A pleasure. You know, this is the game we're all in, right? We're all looking to wake up to this in ourselves. And we might think of it in different ways. We might think of it in terms of what we think will give that to us. Ah, I want to reach this level of success. I want to reach this level of accomplishment, because then I will feel relaxed. I will feel content. I will feel free. I will get quieter on the inside. I will experience peace of mind. I will experience connection to life. I will experience love. Or we think it has to come through relationship. or we think it has to come through bank balance, or we think it has to come through fame, or we think it has to come through any external channel. But as we start to see, it's just the feeling of being alive. It's just the nature of the mind is quiet, is peace, is present. There's nothing you really need to do to be who you already are. And the more we see it, the easier it is, the less it feels like there is to do, and the more we just start to enjoy it. And that's why they call meditation the great undoing. Because bit by bit, all our ideas of what's necessary, what's a prerequisite, what has to happen in order for me to be free, to be unleashed, to show up in the world. I say, oh, well, that's not true either. Oh, that's not real either. Oh, that's not a prerequisite either. And more, we're free to show up and respond to what shows up and to love every bit of it. Let's go to Philadelphia to an old friend of the show, Dan. Dan, welcome to the show. What's on your mind today, buddy?
Hi, Michael. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
Okay, good. I was planning on calling sometime in December, but when I heard that this was going to be the show for the rest of the year, the only time I'd have an opportunity to talk, I wanted to call in and just let you know, between holidays, for Thanksgiving, I wanted to say thank you. And for the holidays later in December, I just wanted to give a gift of gratitude. For myself to be able to tell you this is a gift to myself, and I hope that you receive, just knowing how much you've helped me over the years, and I'm very thankful for the work that you've done. And when I get caught up in thoughts and stories in the mind, I return to that centered, grounded, peaceful place, otherwise known as home, that you refer to in Space Within. So I just wanted to have the opportunity to tell you all that, and you gave me that opportunity, and I really appreciate it. So have a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you, Dan. You too. That's nice. Let me talk a little bit. Let's see, where do we go from there? Okay, I'm flummoxed. Somebody said something nice to me. not really that rare, but it is appreciated. Thank you, Dan. Okay, couple of things, what we've got coming up. So we are actually 70% full, which I just found out just before coming on air, for a program that doesn't start till next February. It's the biggest program I'm doing next year. It's called the Genius Catalyst Program. And it's a chance to really kind of go deep into what it is to wake up this potential, right? What it is to wake up to this deeper potential in us and live from it. So not just to see it, but to stabilize in it, to make it a come from and not just a place that you occasionally visit. You can learn more about that at michaelneal.org/Genius Catalyst Program. We'll also, over the next couple weeks, couple cool things happening. So starting next week, you'll be able to buy the all new edition of Supercoach. So Supercoach, for those of you who don't know, was my third Hay House book. And it was the one that really launched sort of the last decade of my work. It was my first attempt at articulating these principles. And I think I did a very average job the first time around. And so it was kind of a delight when Hay House gave me the opportunity to rewrite it for the 10th anniversary. And so that all new edition, it's about 50% different to the original, will come out on Tuesday. And if you're a subscriber at michaelneal.org, we're going to share a lot of excerpts. We'll share audio excerpts from the audiobook and text excerpts from the book, and also video clips from the Supercoach self-coaching program, which will come out around the same time as the book. So all that to come, Creating the Impossible for 2019. Those of you who are waiting for that, we're going to go live with that just after Thanksgiving. And as always, we'll have a sort of a special offer for those of you who join us over the first week to 10 days. But let's just talk about the year ahead. And I'm doing this because, like I say, I realized just before the show, this is going to be my last chance to talk to you guys live before the new year. And so it just occurs to me, what one of my favorite things. So for years, I did a sort of a year-end planning process that I called, I didn't call it, it was called Your Best Year Yet. It was by a woman named Ginny Ditzler, who I've since met and become friends with, and a wonderful woman. And it used to be my annual sort of year-end review, the year just gone, and plan the year ahead. And then one day my friend Robert Holden and I were talking, and a lot of you will know Robert. He's got a show on Hay House Radio, and hell, he's been on Oprah. But he also happens to be a great guy. And he happens to be one of my dear, dear friends. And I was just there to see him last week. And we were having a conversation years ago. I think it was 2010. And I'd been talking about making the year ahead my best year yet. And he said, what would be different if you set out to make the year ahead your most enjoyable year yet? And I just thought that was a great question. I thought that was it. That question opened up all sorts of things for me. So I want to offer it to you to actually spend some time with, not just while we're on the, you know, on the show, but to actually kind of contemplate for yourself. What would it be like if 2019, the year ahead, this isn't 2018, depending when you're listening to this, you might be listening to this in 2030, and then you can phone in the last 5 minutes with which stocks I should buy back in 2018. But what if the year ahead, whatever year that is, was your most enjoyable year yet? Right. What kind of directions would you point yourself in? What kind of things would you want to experience and try? What projects might be really fun to take on? What goals might be fun to set and pursue if goals are something that you enjoy setting and pursuing? What might be really enjoyable to work on creating, regardless of how things turn out? Because none of us know exactly how things are going to turn out unless we create a self-fulfilling prophecy. What would make the year ahead your most enjoyable year yet? And I just really encourage you to enjoy that. And if you want to share things, you can share them on the Facebook page, facebook.com/mneil under the little radio quote. And you can share some of the things that you found. But that's one cool thing that you can do as you look to the year ahead. Another thing that I find as I get towards year end that I kind of like to reflect back, I like to take time to explore, is to explore not what did I do that I thought was good and how do I do more of it in the year ahead, but what did I see that was true? What did I see that was true or more true than I'd seen before? And what if that new seeing, that insight, was at the heart of how I lived my life in the year ahead? What if the things that you've seen this year that have enabled this year to be as nice an experience as you've had this year, what's behind that? And if you haven't had a nice experience of the year, my guess is you've had a mixed experience of the year, because that's what most of us do, right? Sometimes we're really enjoying what's going on. Sometimes we're really not. Is what have you seen that's just true that would enable you to enjoy more of next year, regardless of how things turn out? Like, I play that game from time to time with myself. Is I'll go, what do I actually know? Like, I talk a lot, right? You can't really host a show like this without talking a lot, but I talk a lot, right? And there are times where I just have to stop. Believe it or not, there are long periods of time where I don't talk about this stuff. But when I get rolling, I get rolling. But when I stop and step back and go, well, what do I really know that's true? One of the things that I see is people really don't do well when they're up in their heads. Now, it just seems like a simple enough point, right? But actually, for me, it's at the heart of almost every question about the human potential that comes my way. Right? Every question about performance. How can I perform better? How can I perform at a higher level? How can I perform at a higher level more consistency? More consistently. It comes back again and again and again to how in my head am I? And what am I going to do with that? Now, what most people do, if they see, so first thing is to actually see, wow, that's a real important variable. Like how self-conscious am I? How up in my head thinking about everything am I? And it's going to be variable, right, for all of us, right? Unless you actually get a lobotomy, and I don't know how that works, like how that would play out. But you're going to have mental activity, right? You're going to think. You're going to have things on your mind. So it doesn't seem to me to be up to you whether you have a lot on your mind or not. But if I can see that that variability just affects the quality of my experience, then that frees me up to just kind of flow with it. Like if I can see that, like if I can see that the more I have going on in my head, the harder time I'm going to have doing stuff and probably the worse I'm going to feel because I'm so preoccupied. I'm so filled up with memory and misunderstanding, right? That there's no room for freshness. There's no room for presence. There's no room for aliveness. Then I don't have to worry about it because I know when I'm up, I'm up. When I'm down, I'm down. Right? It's not a problem. It's like that old horrible t-shirt. I don't have a drinking problem. I drink, I fall down, no problem. Well, we don't have a thinking problem. We think. It brings us up or brings us down. No problem. It's just how we work. Right? Another thing that I really know is that when people just show up and aim themselves in a direction, what starts to come through them is phenomenal. People are continually surprising themselves when they allow themselves to be in a situation where they can be surprised. So one way that you start to see more of the human potential is by walking into situations that you don't normally go into, where you can't rely on your past experience to guide you through, where you have to kind of throw yourself on the mercy of this genius inside us, on the mercy of this deeper intelligence, on the mercy of this creative force. And every time we do, it lifts us up. It's like, I've described it on other shows as being like a giant updraft, right? Jumping off a cliff with a hang glider, if you don't understand the physics of it, is just as terrifying as jumping off a cliff without a hang glider. But if you not only understand the physics of it because you've read a book, but if you've had some experiences of being lifted up by the air, of being held aloft by invisible forces, then you know what an incredible sense of freedom is available, and you're not scared to jump off the next cliff, or the next one, because you know what's there to catch you, what's there to lift you up, what's there to kind of carry you as you glide to the ground. And how you glide, how you dance with that updraft, that's the artistry of your life. That is the art of living. No one can tell you the best way to do that. But if you don't know there's an updraft, if you don't know there is something inside you that will give you exactly what you need, exactly when you need it, that will bring you fresh thought in any moment, that will bring you solutions to any problem. Not conventional solutions, probably. Because if it was a conventional solution, it probably would have just popped up in your memory banks. It would have popped up on Google. But solutions that are somehow perfect for you, even if they don't look anything like what it is you thought the solution would be. To know that that is alive in us. That is a part of our nature, that real-time responsive intelligence, that underlying order, that what David Bohm, the physicist, called implicate order. Well, there's an incredible amount of freedom in that. And that's just part of the human potential. It is not unique to you any more than it's unique to me. It is no more present in Hay House listeners than people who've never heard of Hay House. It's no more present in good moral people than in bad immoral people. The only variable is to what extent do we recognize it and to what extent do we rely on it. So I remember a few years back, I was doing my year-end review, as I do most years, and I was talking about some stuff that I was really worried about with one of my mentors, and he said, "Wow, it seems to me like you have a lack of faith in mind." And I didn't quite know what he meant, but I felt insulted anyways. And I kind of, you know, my ego got all riled up and I was like, well, but I also instantly knew that that was true. I could see that the reason I was so worried about the future was because I had no understanding of the updraft in most of my life. I had no understanding of the fact that just because I couldn't see what was there to carry me, that didn't mean that there wasn't something there to carry me, to uplift me, to bring me back, to hold me aloft. There's something so comforting for me each time I see life catch somebody. I see this deeper mind catch somebody. I feel myself held up, lifted up, uplifted by this current, like an electric current of aliveness. And a whole different world of things becomes possible when I see that I'm not trapped in a world of things. A whole new set of dreams becomes possible when I start to see that the whole of life is a dream. A whole new set of experiences becomes possible when I see that I'm not that which I've thought. I'm the thinker. We are not the output of the system. We are at the very heart of it. We are the source. That doesn't mean we're in control. I mean, your experience might be different from mine, but sure doesn't look to me like I control what happens, like I control which thoughts to come to mind, that I control, you know, what even often what I do or don't do. But it does seem to me that the more awake I am to the ordinary miracles of being alive, that we are alive, that we are infinitely aware, that we are thinkers, that we can think anything and experience anything, that to me is the very heart of the human potential. So, hope you've enjoyed the show. I have enjoyed you. Hope you enjoy the replays till the end of the year. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.